Last week we spoke about the causes of mental agitation or the causes of the functions of the mind, why certain thoughts are there. And then we mentioned that rather than just trying to control the mind, we should control the source. Control the source of the thoughts, what's causing it. And it was a very interesting subject because oftentimes trying to control the mind can be futile because we're not addressing the cause. And so I wanted to go more deeply into that topic tonight, but I need you all to let me know if you can see me and hear me, because occasionally the seeing and hearing is not good. So Catherine, is it okay? Pallavi, is it okay? Yes, I'm very comfortable here. I might fall asleep, so you'll have to keep me awake. Actually, sometimes I fall asleep on this couch. So there's an explanation in the Srimad Bhagavatam. It says that when a fire comes, it might burn leaves, but it won't burn the root of the tree. It'll burn the leaves around it. And that is analogous to a yogi burning up burning up the mind, the thoughts, but not actually getting to the root. And that whole chapter in the Bhagavatam was describing the process of atonement. You do something wrong, then you atone for it, you make up for it. And the point of that chapter was that atonement doesn't uproot the cause of the activity the person performed. So one may atone, but it's not for certain that that atonement is going to purify them. And in fact, the point of this chapter was you have to go deeper to purify yourself. Atonement is good, but Prabhupada says it's not really necessary for a devotee, because in Krishna consciousness and bhakti, the real atonement is acting again or standing up again and acting in bhakti, because that will purify the root cause of the desire to sin. So I wanted to read something for all of you who came early. You're going to get to hear this. And this is from Bhaktisiddhanta. It's interesting. He says, the question was asked, what is the easiest way to achieve a tranquil mind? And he says, the mind can only be restrained by performing Sri Krishna Nam Kirtan. When one follows the path of karma, which means acting to create piety to get a better birth in their next life, or jnana, which means detachment from this world. Jnana means knowledge, but what it means is understanding that we're spiritual beings, understanding that this world is not our home. And through that understanding, detaching oneself. So he says, when one follows the path of karma, jnana, yoga, and so forth, and yoga is a meditative process, at least as it's referred to here in the traditional sense, it's a process of meditation, of controlling the mind. So the mind may temporarily become stable. So here's the important word, temporarily. But it inevitably returns to a reactionary state. Thus one falls into the ocean of transience and agitation. So in other words, the same point is, he's making the same point, that through certain processes one may pacify the mind. But the cause of the agitation is not addressed, and therefore it's only temporary. Just like you can take an aspirin doesn't address the cause of your problem, it only relieves the symptom. So when the aspirin wears away, if the cause of the problem has not been cured, then the cause is the headache is still going to be there, or whatever ailment it is going to be there. So that's the idea. So, wanted to relate to you an experience I had, I often have, in teaching. particularly in teaching about japa, because when I teach about japa, one of the things we're doing is helping people develop new habits, better habits. And so they're coming in with japa habits that may not always be good for them. You know, chanting and not concentrating. We're all familiar with bad japa, so you already know what it is. And a lot of the bad japa is just a habit. It's just the way we do it. Maybe we chant and we don't focus. We may not even sit straight. We may be doing other things. And if we do that enough, or if that's the way we started initially with our japa, then it becomes a habit. So in the japa retreat, devotees are learning new habits, and they're also becoming more aware of the things they're doing that are impeding good japa. In other words, the bad habits. And usually what happens at japa workshops and japa retreats is that people, devotees, have a very deep experience in chanting, deeper than they normally have. And it's very inspiring, and it's very enlightening, because they realize how wonderful the holy name is and how deep one can go in chanting. And so the whole experience for many is actually unique. It's different than the chanting that they normally do. So I always have this sense on the last day that people are thinking, this was very nice, but when I go back, I'm afraid that it's probably going to be the way it was before I came. You ever have that feeling where you can't trust yourself? You think, well, I don't want to go here, or I don't want to do this because I can't trust myself. It was kind of like that, kind of that feeling. The devotees would be leaving with kind of a sense of, I would like to implement what I've learned, but there's this eerie feeling that I may give in to my habits and may give in to the environment in which I'm in, which is always pulling me, do this, do this. And so the many devotees go back, maybe most devotees, if not all, go back with a kind of sense that it was a good weekend, there's a lot of realization, they were happy. But to maintain that is not possible. And as a teacher, I always felt, this was a big concern for me. Because it's like we're going out and we're saying, okay, it was good, but it's going to get worse. It can't stay this way. And I began thinking about this, and I thought it would be better to have a different attitude, and the better attitude would be, from this point, let us gradually improve over time, so it will get better, rather than it going back to the way it was, or going back somewhere close to the way it was. Let's make it better. I mean, that's a better thought, isn't it? Don't you agree? Obviously. I mean, if you're going to set a goal, or you have an intention, that would be a great intention to have. That, for anything, not just japa, but for anything. Let me improve slowly over time. Right? Sharada, if you want to join the chat, just click on where it says chat, and then you can, and then it'll ask you for the password, Radhe, and then you can. So, this is common. It's, you know, we commonly may run into situations where perhaps we learn something, but we're not sure how well we can apply it or how successful we'll be with it. You know, or we may kind of calculate how well we can do with it. And we may want to do better, but we calculate that we'll do less. And so it's really not a good strategy. And this can show up in many ways. Another way I see this showing up is in practical day-to-day chanting of our rounds. Sometimes we know when we chant our rounds, it's very fluid, and our mind is very clear. It may have something to do with what we did the day before or the service we're doing, or just our general attitude, our consciousness. It's more serious. And we're chanting and we're there with the holy name and we're hearing and the heart is there and we're feeling very inspired by our chanting. But some days it's not like that. Some days it's quite the opposite, and we've all experienced that. And it's very interesting how the mind works, because when it's like that, often we think it's just the way it is and it's the way it's going to be. And there's not much we can do about it. And I'm sure you've felt that way before. And, you know, we're chanting, the mind is disturbed, if something has happened in that day or the day before, or there's a lot going on, and we're thinking about, we're worrying about something, or thinking about something we have to do. And the mind is just, it's very passionate, and we all know what passion feels like. Passion feels like an engine that's revving up. It just wants to go. And sometimes we're chanting, and we'd rather be doing something than chanting. And what I've found is that when that happens, the mind tends to accept that this is just the way it is. And you can verify that by saying, well, because this happened yesterday, or this is what I have to do today, and then we give into it. And then we're not really hearing, we're not really with the holy name. We're just chanting to get it over with. And so it's kind of an attitude of giving in to a situation, and you can expand upon that in different areas of your life in which we're in a situation which we may feel is not that conducive to Krishna consciousness, whatever it might be. Maybe a grihastha, or you may be very busy raising a family, or working, going to school, or just busy with service. And you may feel that the situation is so, there's so much pressure on you, or there's so much to do, it's not really conducive for your devotional service. And then we give into that. We just say, okay, it's not conducive, therefore I will have to lower my expectations of how Krishna conscious, I can be or will be in this situation. So I wanted to address that, because in my experience, I've realized that we don't have to give into that. And in fact, I have found that in those situations, if you begin to think there is a better way, there is a solution, for example, I can calm my mind down, there are ways to do it, I can have more control, you will find that you actually do have more control. But often we don't think we can, and that's our problem. So now if we go back to what I was talking about at the Japa retreat, where devotees are leaving thinking, this was nice, but I won't be able to maintain it, as opposed to thinking, this was good, and I want to improve from here and go on step by step. Usually, what we'll find is that on some level, there is a belief that is affecting that attitude. And you'll always find that under the thought process are beliefs that we may not even be aware of them. And beliefs often arise from experience. So if your experience is that when you go to a retreat or a seminar or you do something to concentrate over a period of time to improve, but you can't maintain it, then because of that experience, you develop a belief that it's not possible to maintain a high level that you achieve when you achieve it in a concentrated way, in a very focused effort, it's not possible to maintain that. And because you believe that, or because we believe that, that guides how we will continue in that particular activity. Now, it's very common that we believe something because of past experience. But very common. Or we believe something because of something we read, or something somebody told us, or just something that, you know, everybody believes, everybody knows. Like when you say, well, everybody knows. Like, everybody knows if you chant your rounds in the evening, they're not going to be good rounds because it's late in the day and you're tired, right? We all know that, right? So since we all know that, then we already expect that the rounds aren't going to be good, and we probably won't even try to chant them that well, because we already know that at night, at the end of the day, your mind is tired, you can't focus, and so on and so on. Now, that's usually, most devotees have that experience. I have that experience. Oh, I have some rounds left. It's late at night. I'd rather be in bed. I'm tired. It's difficult to chant well. That's my experience. But I've realized that because that's my experience, it doesn't have to become my belief. But if it remains my belief, then I find that, yes, whenever I chant at night, I don't chant well, because, as I already know, I can't chant well at night because that's my experience. But if I don't go along with that, then I have found that I can actually chant very good rounds at night if I decide that I'm going to. I'm going to do that. That's what I'm going to do. And I make a shift from past experience to what I would like to do now. So then you see what's happening is, when we do that, past experiences don't have to shape present experiences or future experiences. Just like in our movement, many devotees took sannyas when they were young and they couldn't keep it up. So Prabhupada said, well, you can get married or you can come back as a brahmachari and go ahead, go forward. So he was always a forward-thinking person. That let's move forward. Whatever has happened in the past, that's one thing, but let's move forward from this point. So it's valuable to look at how beliefs are formed from experiences or things that we've read or accepted wisdom or common sense. But many of those beliefs are actually work against us. They hinder us. And they're not beliefs that are aligned with what we want to achieve. Just like if I want to improve my japa, to believe at the end of a japa retreat it's not possible to continually improve or not possible to maintain this level of chanting, that belief is not in alignment with what I want to achieve. What is in alignment with what I want to achieve is that it is possible and that I can do it if I apply myself. And that's true. And we have that experience also. So we are carrying beliefs which are what we could say from our past conditioning, and then we may carry them into the present, but they don't work for what we want to achieve, and we require more empowering beliefs. And so, as we discussed last week, when we're trying to focus our mind or trying to control our mind, but we have beliefs going on that are in opposition to what we want to think. We're having a storm here, so it's possible the electricity could go out. And if it goes out, well, we're running on batteries. We should be okay, actually. Anyway, so it's possible to align or to create new beliefs, which will create new thoughts. Now, I was explaining this a little bit last week, and I find this very important for us. If we're acting a certain way and we want to change that, oftentimes we're just trying to change it on the level of thoughts. Don't think this way, think this way. But underlying the thoughts, there may be beliefs. And I gave this example last week, and I think it's worth repeating again. It's a really good example. And Srila Prabhupada was asked by one devotee, why is sexual attraction so strong? Why is the opposite sex so attractive? And Prabhupada gave a very simple answer. He said, it's attractive because you want to enjoy it. And when a devotee becomes Krishna conscious, he is or she is purifying his or her heart. And that purification is to understand, I'm servant, not enjoyer. And when that mentality shifts, then that which used to be attractive is no longer attractive. And therefore, that which used to disturb the mind does not disturb the mind. Because the cause of this disturbance was caught. It was snuffed out And it was changed to a different mentality. I'm servant. So if my belief is that the opposite sex was created for my enjoyment, and I don't change that belief, and I try to control my mind because I'm practicing celibacy or I'm practicing sexual purity, and I try to control my mind, it's going to be virtually impossible to control my mind, because the foundational beliefs that I have are telling me that I am Purusha, I am male, I am enjoyer of a woman, that women are for my enjoyment. So I'm constantly battling with my mind, and sometimes this takes the point or the angle where a person will start to resist or resent these things because there's so much desire to enjoy, but their intelligence is saying, no, but you should not enjoy them. But their beliefs are not aligned with their intelligence. So on the belief level, they're thinking, woman is for my enjoyment. And it sometimes comes to a point where the only way they can control themselves is by repression or by repulsion. And then they'll say, oh, women or this and that. They'll have some nasty language for women in order to prevent themselves because the attraction is so strong. And they're doing that to try to control their thoughts. So you can see how it's a really useless process, because the very nature of their thought process on the fundamental level is I'm the enjoyer. And it's totally out of alignment with the philosophy that they're practicing and the philosophy that they want, and therefore their mind's disturbed. So that's what Bhaktisiddhanta is saying. You know, you can, all right, okay, so you even find this, that sometimes we chant japa and the mind calms down. But then those same desires come again, because at a more fundamental level, they have not been rooted out. And so the japa is pacifying. Of course, more pacifying than yoga or karma or jnana. But still, the fundamental nature of the beliefs, or the fundamental nature of the attitude that I am the enjoyer, if that doesn't change, it's virtually impossible to control the mind permanently. So if we look into things which we believe, we'll start to see that there are many things which we believe that are actually out of alignment with what we want in our life. And that's why sometimes when we're trying to achieve something, we can't get it, because there's a belief operating which is going against ourselves. And that's why, you know, Krishna says the mind can be the friend or the enemy. And that's why Prabhupada said we can be our worst enemy. Prabhupada said, we can be the greatest obstacle to our own advancement, because we're believing things which go against what we are trying to achieve. And beliefs are very powerful, because they're sometimes referred to as self-fulfilling prophecies. Just like if you leave the japa retreat and you believe that you can't really maintain it, then you wouldn't try, because you don't believe you can. I find a very, very common problem is that devotees who are working in companies or in businesses that are not devotee-owned or not their own business, often will tell me it is very, very difficult to be Krishna conscious at work. And no doubt that's true, but often what I'm hearing is a belief behind that which really says it's impossible to be Krishna conscious at work. Now, if that belief's operating, it's impossible to be the Krishna conscious at work, or it's extremely difficult to be Krishna conscious at work, if that belief's operating because that's your experience, then the belief reinforces the experience. And because you believe it, that's what your experience is going to be. Because we view things from different angles of vision. And if the angle of vision is, I can't be Krishna conscious in this situation, then everything that happens will kind of reinforce that. Yeah, just see, you know, we had to work overtime and this and that, and this proves I can't be Krishna conscious. Whereas if you take a different viewpoint and think, No, I can be Krishna conscious at work. I just have to understand how. Then with that belief, it opens up the potential to see how it's possible. And there are many ways it's possible. It's like from one viewpoint, everything's a problem. And from another viewpoint, you start to see solutions. No, I can be Krishna conscious at work. It's possible. Maybe that's not my experience so far, but what we're talking about is aligning your beliefs with what you want to achieve, not believing just what you've experienced if that goes against what you want. So obviously you want to be Krishna conscious at work. You can be much more Krishna conscious at work than you might think, but you have to have that fundamental belief that it's possible. And then that, as you have that belief, it starts to become a reality. You can do the same thing with your japa, that I can improve, that it is possible to chant well, even when my mind is disturbed. It is possible to pacify my mind, to control my mind at any time, in any place. You may think, no, how is that possible? I've never done that. If you make the effort to do that and you believe it can be done, you'll start to see that faster than you think, you actually have control to bring your mind down and get it under control and be able to hear. You can, but you have to have a foundational assumption that it's possible. But if you go in there and say, well, my mind is disturbed, and usually when my mind's disturbed like this, or my experience is, it takes me about 8 rounds before it calms down. A lot of devotees have that experience. You know, 4 rounds, 5 rounds, 6 rounds, until the mind calms down. And I have had that experience for many years. But I came to the point of having the desire that I want to chant nicely from the first beat onwards. And because of that desire and that belief that it could be done, and the belief that I could bring my mind under my control and hear the mantra, I was able to do it. I can't always do it successfully immediately, but I found great power in that, because it's entering the arena with an attitude of what is possible, not based on my past experience, but based on what I want to experience now. Because as we said, beliefs create experience. I can't chant japa well at night. Okay, you probably never will then. Not probably, you won't. I can't chant good rounds for the first 4 rounds because my mind's disturbed. Okay, that's your belief and that's what you're going to experience. Your beliefs will reinforce your experience. So, and then you're trying to control your mind, but you can't, because on a more fundamental level, you don't think it's possible. So it's really a science of how the mind works, and it's a science of how beliefs create realities. Now, I'll give an example. I think I gave this last week. It's a really nice example. I joined the Krishna Conscious Movement when I was 19. And at that time, I came out of a culture which was exploring psychedelic drugs and free sex. And so just looking at that from a more objective view, one might say that a Swami coming from India, going into a culture in which people are exploring freedoms they never explored before, and society is allowing this to go on, and sexual habits are entirely changed from what they were a few years ago, and exploration with psychedelic drugs just exploded. And it doesn't look like that would be a good time to spread a spiritual movement which has as its basis no illicit sex and no intoxication. Somehow or other, I joined, many other devotees joined, and we did not think based on the past. We only thought based on what we wanted from the future. If we thought based on the past, then we would think, I can't do this, because since the age of 15 or 16, I started experimenting with drugs, I had girlfriends, I did so many bad things. it's not going to be possible to give these things up. It doesn't make sense. It's not logical. So, obviously, anyone who joined the movement did not think in that logical way, because if they did, they wouldn't have joined, because they would have a whole set of beliefs that said, I would be telling them, you can't do this. But there was no sense of that. The only sense was, I'm going to do this. And a whole new set of beliefs came to us to align us with what we wanted to do. This is possible. We can do this. The holy name is powerful. The process is powerful. We accepted that. And so we just kind of did a topsy-turvy, upside-down switch, which had no relation to anything in our previous experience. So that's my point, that if you want to go forward from this point on, and if you're going to look back for verification from the past to create the beliefs to go on forward, you're probably not going to get them, or you may not get them, because those beliefs are conditioned by things which are out of alignment with what you want to achieve. Does that make sense? So we have to alter our beliefs in alignment. Now, another really good example. I love this example. In the scripture, it is said, Lord Chaitanya said, my name will be heard in every town and village. We know that verse. As many towns and villages there are, my name will be known. Yada nagaradi gram. Many towns and villages there, as there are, my name will be known. Srila Prabhupada told us that his godbrothers, when they discussed this verse, they thought this was just India, or this was just kind of a eulogy, something to inspire, but not a reality. And particularly, they thought that Krishna consciousness was not meant for non-Indians, not meant for Christians, Muslims, Jews, Buddhists. And so Prabhupada was given the order to spread Krishna consciousness in the West. And his godbrothers did not think it was possible. They didn't think it was going to happen. But Prabhupada said, I believed in the word of my spiritual master. So you see, Prabhupada's position was different. It had to be, because if it wasn't, he wouldn't have come, because his belief would have been like theirs. It's not possible. Why bother? And he would have based it on experience. And what was the experience? Well, two or three of his godbrothers went to London previously, and they failed. They said nobody was interested, they can't understand. And Shastra calls people outside the Vedic culture Malechas and Yavanas. And generally, these people are considered repairable. Is that the right word? Can't repair them. You can't bring them into the Vedic culture. I mean, that consideration is there in some people's minds. And so obviously, if that's your belief, you wouldn't come to the West to teach those people Krishna conscious, because after all, they can't be Krishna conscious. But Prabhupada came to the West and he had a different vision, because he had different beliefs, because his spiritual master inspired him that this could be possible, or that it would be possible. And so his beliefs were what? That this is going to happen. And because he believed that, people started coming. If he had, you imagine, if Prabhupada had doubts, how that would have affected the whole movement? I'm not sure this is going to happen. I'm not sure people were going to come. His beliefs were in the area of, this doesn't look like it's going to happen. All of this would have just put him right on the boat back to India. And it would have probably created that experience, because it would have fulfilled his doubts. And I'm sure in your life you'll see sometimes how if you doubt something, the doubt becomes true. It manifests. Or if you have faith in something, something manifests. If you're If you're fearful about something, that something comes to you. If you're fearless about something, it kind of opens up so many possibilities and things start coming. And so thoughts have waveforms and energy and they attract things. And you can see this in your life when you're hesitant and things don't come to you. When you're bold and you're open and confident and you believe things are possible, they start to manifest. And that's what we see with Srila Prabhupada's preaching. That he had this deep faith, and so things started coming to him. And so you could really, you know, see what level of his, where his faith was, what level it was. What you could see by his action what he was believing. So it's a very good formula to look at action, look at someone's action, and then just ask, but particularly look at your own action and ask, what would someone have to believe to do this? What belief would someone have to be thinking like this? And as you do that, you'll start to see at a certain level there's a belief, which might be a belief in a lack of your own ability to do something, your own confidence. It could be a lack of faith. If we're failing in somewhere, in some way, we're going to look and find, if we ask the question, what would someone have to believe to fail in this way? And you'll fail in this way, and then you'll start to see. What could they possibly believe? They believe that they can't do it. They believe it's not possible. They believe they've never done it before, so why should it happen now? And we have all kinds of beliefs, which are not really based on anything other than some experience. And you know this example we give, or you've probably heard this, the example of the seed. The mind is like the garden and you plant the seeds. And so the seeds are the thoughts, and then the thoughts grow. So now we plant these seeds of faith, and faith grows, or we plant these seeds of doubt, and doubt grows, right? Because that's the nature of the mind. It's magnifying, it's amplifying. So you place something in it, and it amplifies it. So we may have a belief in our own inadequacy, and so we plant this seed of a thought, which it has stem, or is coming and being nurtured by the belief, and then it becomes stronger and stronger. And as it becomes stronger, there becomes more evidence in our activities of the truth of that belief, because that belief attracts that reality. I am not capable of doing this. Did you ever feel incapable of doing something and tremendously succeeded? Generally not. Generally you fail. That's how it works, because the seed is planted. So now, if you take that in general to your practices of Krishna consciousness, what you might find is that, well, I'm very fallen and I can't become purified, or I can't become very Krishna conscious, or I can only be this Krishna conscious. And then we create all kinds of parameters and limitations about how Krishna conscious we can and can't be. And if we do that, they become the parameters, because we create them. It's how it works. Where what the scripture is showing us, what Prabhupada is showing us and encouraging us to do, is to practice Krishna consciousness with a higher level of faith in the process and what the process can do. And so it's not about us thinking what we're capable of, but it's more about faith in the process, what the process can do if I apply it well. So then we can change our beliefs and say, yes, this is possible. This level of Krishna consciousness is possible if I apply myself. But then you might say, well, I have beliefs about applying myself. I'm not a determined person. A lot of people say things like this. I'm not a determined person. Sometimes people say I'm a lazy person. But if you actually analyze that, you see that they're just saying that as an excuse for being lazy. Because if you say I'm a lazy person, then it's okay to be lazy, right? Because after all, what can you do? You're helpless because you're a lazy person. And lazy people are not active, they're not determined, they're not super enthusiastic, because they're lazy. And that's why you're not determined and super enthusiastic, because you're a lazy person. So now, if you want to be successful in any effort, it's not good to be a lazy person. Actually, Prabhupada said, the lazy people are the worst, the lowest. I forget the question that was asked him. I just heard it yesterday. He was asked something about lazy people, and you know, people in passion and lazy people. And he said, lazy people, they're the worst. And he started talking about sleeping and oversleeping and how it's so bad. So what we might do, and not even be aware of it, is we just believe we're lazy. That's a belief we have about ourselves. And so, because I believe I'm lazy, then the laziness manifests. So what came first, the belief that I'm lazy, or the feeling that I'm lazy, which created the belief? It doesn't really matter. But what matters is to understand how that affects your ability. Now, we have one devotee with us here, Sharada. She's watching. And so Sharada and I were communicating, and we were talking about anger. And interesting thing about anger is what you find is that anger, when people get angry, anger is not the first emotion. There's something else under that that caused the anger. Like, let's say you expect somebody to do something, they don't do it, then you get angry. So actually, you felt betrayed, and the feeling of betrayal triggered in the anger. Or you wanted something to happen a certain way, and it happened another way. And so really what you want, you weren't accepting of the situation, so that inability to accept caused you to become angry. There's something under that. So, and then if you go further, then you say, okay, I was expecting something. And then, well, what's the belief? What would one have to believe to expect something? One would have to believe that whatever you'd have to believe. So then you see behind the expectation or behind the betrayal, there's a belief. And because of that belief, you feel betrayed. Whereas if you didn't have that belief, you may not feel betrayed. You know, I may have mentioned this before, but in our forgiveness class, we give out a whole sheet of beliefs that one may have about forgiveness. And what we see by going over these beliefs is that if anyone has any one of these beliefs, they won't be able to forgive. Like if you have the belief that a person has to apologize to you before you can forgive them, and they don't apologize, then you can't forgive them. Whereas if you change the belief that I can forgive if someone doesn't apologize, then you could forgive. So you see, one belief holds you or binds you, and then it becomes a cause of your resentment or holding a grudge. And changing that belief completely changes your approach towards forgiveness or towards that, how you deal with that person. So as you go down and down and down, you see that there are deeper levels of control. And then the ultimate level is the belief that I'm a servant of Krishna. And I believe it was Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur, he said something really nice. He said that the reason a pure devotee can never fall, he said, because he can never be shaken out of his realization or his position that I'm a servant of Krishna. That's always there. And you know, we've heard that a million times, but when you go more deeply into this understanding and understanding it on a very fundamental level of how it affects everything in your mind and thoughts, the attitude, I am your servant, which Bhaktisiddhanta used to tell his disciples, I am your servant. He never thought himself a master. That being situated in that consciousness, I am your servant, I'm the servant of everyone, that level, everything changes. From that belief, everything changes. But our problem is we don't have that belief. We have many other beliefs. Maybe we have that to some degree. We have many other beliefs mixed in there. Like, I'm an enjoyer. In any I mean, it's very interesting. If you notice sometimes the conditioned response to try to enjoy things in this world, you ever notice that? You're just looking at something and you think about enjoying it, and then you catch yourself. Where does that come from? It comes from that fundamental nature that I think I'm the enjoyer. Because if I thought everything in this world is for Krishna, and everything I have is meant to be used in his service, I would never think about enjoying anybody or anything, ever. Because that's my fundamental platform of operation. That's where I live. Those are my beliefs at the fundamental level. So the fact that we have difficulty is because we have other beliefs. That, well, maybe Krishna's enjoyer, maybe I'm enjoyer also, or whatever it may be. So you can explore these. And as you explore them, you'll start to see how powerful they are in shaping your consciousness and in shaping your thoughts. And you'll see very clearly that controlling the mind, whatever it may be, controlling anger, whatever, can't be controlled on that level, because that's the level of effect. And the thoughts are coming out as the effect of something deeper. That's very, very powerful if you really enter into this understanding of beliefs. Then you understand that all the principles of Krishna consciousness, when they become fundamental beliefs for you, they become your operating paradigms. So the pure devotee's fundamental belief from which he operates is I'm servant. Never operates from the view of I'm enjoyer. That's his viewpoint on everything. I am servant. Everyone and everything. So our goal in Krishna consciousness is to align our beliefs with our intentions of what we want to achieve, what we know is right. And that's why, you know, when you say this thing, I don't know if I can trust myself. That means you probably have a belief which is running in opposition to what you want to achieve. And therefore your life is always this kind of push and pull. You feel yourself, you know, being pulled back and forth because you want to go left, but your beliefs are pulling you right. And if you go to the level of changing those beliefs, then now you're in alignment. And so there's not this push and pull, and your life becomes easier, and your mind becomes peaceful. So that's what we want to do. So I had just written Sharada, and I was saying how, you know, if you look at an issue of control, let's say I want to control something, or I want to control somebody, and I can't, and so therefore I get upset, and then I become angry. Well, look at what would be the opposite. So the opposite would be what? Appreciation. That would be extreme opposite of not accepting someone. Full acceptance, appreciation, honoring them, and so forth. So if on a fundamental level, the belief is that this person is so much to be appreciated, so much to be honored, and I should always encourage them and so forth. And that changes, and that becomes your belief, and that's where you operate from, then acceptance becomes automatic. And there's no more anger, there's no more frustration. Sounds simple, but actually you think about it and see how the mind works. It is simple in a sense. And it's on that level that we make changes. I remember changes I've made throughout my life, and I see that all those changes were on fundamental levels. They were not changes in what was going on in my mind, you know, catching the thoughts. Oh, there it goes, bring it back. Oh, there it goes. Those thoughts were just the effects. You could see how, you know, okay, you bring it back. The yogi is meditating, he brings it back. But then, whoop, it comes up again. Oh, bad thought, don't think that. Don't think a bad thought. Just like you can joke and say, don't think this bad thought, and you tell somebody what the thought is. And so if they're any way attracted to that bad thought, they're going to start thinking about it. Right? Whereas if they're not attracted, it's like, even if you say, don't think about this, they would think, why do I want to think about that? They wouldn't think about it. So you can look at your life, and you can see how you operate. And this can be extremely powerful for you in aligning your mind, your thoughts, with what is really your goals and intentions in life. And then you'll see how out of alignment you can be, because your beliefs, you know, they're just beliefs you have from wherever you get them. They may not be serving you. I mean, I had a belief of a limitation on developing a project that I wanted to do. And I thought, well, I'm not that good. I can only do it so well. And then as I thought about it, I realized that was just a foolish belief. And that belief would limit the size of the project because of my belief that it could only be this big. Whereas if I remove that belief because I want the project to be this big, then all of a sudden by removing that belief, I could see how to make it larger. I could start to understand how the pieces of the puzzle would fall in. It became very clear to me just when I removed that limitation of what I would be able to achieve. Now, maybe I can't do it on my own. Maybe I'm not the great manager that I would want to be. But it doesn't mean that I won't be able to attract other people who can do these things if I have the belief that it's possible. And I could see how it just opened my vision and consciousness to so many possibilities that I didn't see before. Or I could only be this good at doing something. It really stops us in our tracks. Of course, you know, you might say, well, you know, there has to be some reality. I can't believe my way against a physical reality. Yeah, that's true. But generally, that's not our problem. We believe ourselves against a self-image we have. I'm like this, and I'm incapable, or just lack of confidence to achieve something. And that's really, really where we hurt ourselves. So, Pallavi had something to say. Meditating upon the thought that Krishna is the supreme enjoyer and not me, help me in not shopping. I so wanted to get some crockery, but since 1 week, this is what kept on telling myself. Somehow the desire suddenly drops. Yeah, so it simply becomes a question of how we can use it in Krishna's service. And yeah, how much unwanted stuff we have around, yeah. But really, the essence of a devotee is service to others. And the essence of materialism is everything for me, service to myself. Which is why a devotee is happy and why a materialistic person is not happy. But underlying that essence, as we've been saying, is a fundamental belief system. That life is meant to enjoy. I'm on this, enjoyment comes from satisfying the body, the senses, and therefore acquire as much as I can. These nice things will make me happy. We've been programmed like this. And they're all behind that programming are programmed beliefs, and we believe it's true. And if we want to be Krishna conscious, and we think that way, then we're at odds. It's like friction is always going on. And that's why, as I was saying before, so many times you'll find in yourself, or you may see this with other devotees, this oscillation from one side to another. Because you know to go this way, but you haven't developed enough faith or enough realization or enough advancement to say, this is it. I am servant, I am not enjoyer. Right? And when you do, then you become aligned. And your life is easier. You're not bouncing back and forth all the time. You know, you... Vishwanath Chakravarti Tagore, he wrote a book called Madhurya Kadambini, and he describes that. You know, sometimes a man will say, I want to get married. And he'll say, well, actually, really, I want to become a sannyasi. And then a week later, he'll say, well, maybe I should get married because it's more realistic. And if I become a sannyasi, then, you know, I could fall down. Then he'll say, yeah, but household life, it's very entangling. And I won't have so much time for my spiritual practice, so maybe I should become a sannyasi. You know, then a week later he'll think, but sannyasi life could be very austere and I may not be able to do it. So better I take the safer path and become a grihastha. So he's So what's going on there? Is that there's not a alignment of beliefs which are in alignment with who he is. And so therefore he's got, it's like this split personality going on. You have two persons who have not integrated into some balanced position. So that's what we want to do. Integrate, be balanced, support ourselves. So I just wanted to end with some japa thoughts because that's how we began. And I wanted to reiterate the importance of having, of believing in your own ability to improve your japa and not giving in to what I might call stereotype situations. It's late at night, I can't chant well, I didn't get enough sleep, I can't chant well. My mind is disturbed, it's going to take me so many rounds before I chant well. My mind is so disturbed, I won't even be able to chant well today. This happened last night, therefore I can't chant well. All these things are just, you know, I had bad dreams, I can't chant well this morning. I ate too much last night, I can't chant well this morning. There might be some truth in that, but my point is, if we buy into it and it becomes an operating paradigm, that becomes our experience. Whereas if we say, no, that may be true, but my intention is to chant well now, and this is what I'm going to do, and I know it's possible. And so you have another, you're approaching it in a different way. And then you'll see that it starts to happen. That becomes your reality. So, does anyone have any comments they'd like to make or questions before we go? I think it takes about a minute before I say something and you hear it. So I'm going to sit here for a minute and see, give you the chance to ask any other questions. We have a few minutes left. Oftentimes what I see is when I get off the class and I go to Krishna.com, I see myself still talking for another minute or two. And I realize, well, the transmission is way out of sync. So I have to wait a little while before you can answer my questions. And I have to keep talking and entertaining you while we're waiting. So maybe I should type it. I'll type it, it's faster. Yes. You finally got it. A minute later. Oh, okay. Thank you, Pallavi, for coming. Thank you, Sharada and Vishalakshi, if you're watching, and Siddhartha, if you're watching, and Catherine. And it looks like we have been honored by R.T. Swami, which should be none other than Ritavaja Swami, if he's still here. Thank you for coming. And we will see you all next Tuesday. Hare Krishna.